You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Nathaniel Popkin. Nathaniel, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure.
So, Nathaniel, we're talking about your wonderful book, Everything is Borrowed, your novel that's coming out now in June 2018. Before I start saying anything about it, do you want to say a little bit about where this came from? Where you've written several books. This is your latest one. What was it that drove you initially to begin this particular novel? Can we start there, and then we'll get into different parts of it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a novel that that imagines a story in the historical past and in the recent past and in the present, all in the present. The impetus for the book was me learning about an historical event of an immigrant anarchist from the late 19th century who took it upon himself, or in coordination with a larger group of people, to protest on Yom Kippur. So he was a peddler. He opened his peddler stand in front of the synagogue as an act of taunt. He dressed as if for synagogue in white clothing and read what those anarchists back then called a pure prayer. That is a tract of anarchist writing, probably by someone like Johann Most. And it so angered and infuriated the religious inside the synagogue. And of course, this was the point. The point was to taunt them and they came out of the synagogue and assaulted him. and they were arrested. They were taken away in the paddy wagon. So this story is like very, very vivid. And it actually happened to take place not very far from where I live in Philadelphia. And I sort of put that aside. I also learned that anarchist, Moskowitz, later in his life, became religious, and he ended up being the head of the Jewish Burial Society. And that also struck me as curious and strange. And I wanted to explore how a man changes like that. At the same time, as I started to think about that story, that historical story, it made me think about how people sort of lure others into their own self-betrayal. So those Jews were, on the religious, on their most holy day, which is a day, of course, meant to be about solace and redemption, in a sense, and forgiveness. They commit this act out of anger, and it didn't just happen in this one instance. I've read other similar stories of that kind of thing happening, and it made me think about how we can seduce other people into their own self-betrayal, and so then it for me was a very personal question, because at one time in my life, I felt I had done that. And so then I invented the story of Nicholas Moskowitz, who is an architect in the present day, and he discovers the story of this other Moskowitz because he's been assigned to design a building on an empty parking lot. And he's at a point in his career where he's sort of come to a creative dead stop. He's utterly bored and kind of despairing about his work as an architect. None of it rings authentic to him. And he begins digging for some inspiration into the history of the neighborhood around the site that he's working on. He discovers the story of the anarchist. And it begins to awaken him in certain ways. And at the same time, he's awakened by the assistant architect who works in his office. Her name is Nadia. And she begins to remind him of this other woman from his own past who he felt like he had lured into self-betrayal. And committed an act of cruelty toward. And those three stories from the historic past, the recent past, and the present begin to merge together on the page. And in my mind, this is the way we experience the city. And in a sense, I'm thinking of the city as being able to be read as a book, you know, and so that's almost like the theme of this novel.
I love that. That's very clear. I mean, when you're talking about all of this, of course, you're you know, a historian, a novelist, a critic. There's a lot of different kinds of writing that you do, and as you tell this story, and having read the book, it also makes me think that this process is also about, it seems to be the writing also in a sense about your travels as a writer and how you're always researching. I would imagine, or this is my sort of romantic idea of what you're doing, that you're doing all this interesting research, that you're having dialogues with characters from the past, that these characters are having dialogues with you, and of course leading yourself as well, I would imagine, to personal experiences that are potentially transformative, because you're going through histories that are hidden and that are about real people in the past. Am I really off there, or is that kind of
no?
You know what I mean? It seems to be your process almost. Is this right?
It's really true. I mean, there's like the way I work is that I'm pulling from this sort of vast fabric of the city in much of my work. Derives from my own personal experience and my own interaction and interrogation of a single city, which is Philadelphia. And there's a lot of writers, of course, over the centuries who have made such explorations in their work, and I've been somewhat inspired by them. And of course, and my work has been in nonfiction. I've written three nonfiction books, which observe, interrogate, wonder about, imagine this city in its past, present, and future. And I've written films about the city's history. And in that aspect of my work, I'm always involved in this interrogation that's personal and also of the place. And so, you know, in my imagination as a writer, I think about cities as things that form us as people, and that which are formed by us, and that process is legible in the landscape of the city. And I kind of work with that idea in my work. I had a nonfiction book come out a few months ago, and that, called Finding the Hidden City, and that book enabled a certain kind of observation or interrogation of the city.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because that seems to be where you're also drawing heavily from, and it's this powerful idea too, the hidden city. So this also goes back quite a few years, right? When you were
absolutely
publishing, I mean, what was it?
So Song of the City my first book came out in 2002. So this has been a long journey as a writer. And as a writer, I'm an editor. I do a lot of literary criticism. I do all these different kinds of things. And so you make an interesting point about the way my writing is kind of threading all of these things together. And in Everything is Borrowed, which is apropos of the title, it's really, really true. I am personally borrowing from so many aspects of my own life here. That is, you know, the physical location where I live, my own personal memories, which are hard to escape, other people's memories who I know, things that are going on right now, today, in this neighborhood, things in the past among those people I've discovered and those characters that do, in fact, speak to me. and it, not just the main character of the anarchist monarchist, but the Moskowitz, but others as well, they become alive to me. And what I'm doing in this book is borrowing lots of things, elements, fragments of people's lives and places to help this protagonist, Nicholas Moskowitz, stand up again in his life.
Well,
let's express something about my own, I guess.
Yeah, so let's talk about that connection, as you're saying, to so much that is who you are in Moskowitz and Moskowitz. The idea of to me, I grew up in a Jewish family, and the idea of Jews committing some of this act of violence on Yom Kippur, or Holy Day, it seems both outrageous and as you're saying about betrayal, and also kind of comical and crazy and almost slapstick in its sort of insanity, right? There's this edge to it, and for me anyway, and maybe this is a reach here, but Jewish culture is often like this, has these two sides that seem both outrageous and also of course very deep and philosophical and reverent somehow.
And rational too, and I think that's another thing about belief that I like to explore is how blinding it is, and also the way in which we can act the opposite of what we intend. Those Jews, and I expect that, or I imagine them, that they were all men coming out of the synagogue and assaulting the peddler Moskowitz, a frail kind of. He's an immigrant. He's probably half starving. Yet he and who knows what languages he speaks and how he's able to communicate. But it is an extremely comical situation that these people lose their minds, right? And they act ridiculously. That's why it was so vivid to me when I read about it. And I only all that I had read was a paragraph, like. This gesture of text that enabled me to imagine what happened. Luckily, though, I could kind of imagine it more clearly because I know the location, and I can think about the space and the spatial aspects. But it's so, you make a really interesting point about I think all belief. I mean, there is a deep philosophical aspect to it, but we lose ourselves in, and then we can do things that we might not otherwise do. And there's a performative aspect too, right? I mean, once in a while I find myself, I've had kids and they've actually went to religious school and they had bar mitzvahs and that kind of thing. And, so I found myself, I love to be in the synagogue. It's not the place I love to be. And I found myself there observing the sort of ceremony of marching of the Torah around the synagogue at a certain point in the service. And it's a regular thing. And it strikes me as so strange and almost truly absurd, like the sort of edification or the reification of this book, this text, in physical form, where it's marched around and lifted high in the air and it's kissed and it's celebrated as this thing. I found myself thinking of maybe Monty Python or something. It just seems so funny.
Right. Right. It does. It's a very interesting mix. So of course also this is, the relationship, and the story that you're talking about in many ways also reflects some of what's happening now, intentionally or not, in the political environment that we're in. Have you been talking about that with other people, or is that part of what you're thinking about in this book, reading it in the context of 2018,
19? Yeah. I mean,
King,
Yes. Well, I mean, I wrote it, originally drafted a few years ago, and so that was before we ended up into this intense crisis that we're in, that is both tragic and absurd and horrifying and possibly far worse than any of that. And I was certainly, but even before that, I was quite keyed into issues of foreignness and immigration and otherness, deportation. I mean, and those thoughts and reflections about that are present in this book as Nicholas, I mean, as Julius Moskowitz. So he protests on Yom Kippur some year in the late 19th century, and then he does again. He's part of another, what they called a Yom Kippur ball, where they would really flaunt the holiday and dance and drink and be in public and have speeches, all the while they were supposed to be in synagogue. And he was arrested during one of those. Actually, we know about this because it's in the newspaper, in 1891, for inciting riot. You know, that was the typical thing, blasphemy and inciting riot. And, you know, he went to trial, and the prosecutor really went after him and his colleagues for their otherness. And in fact, he and most of the others refused to testify because they didn't believe in heaven or hell. So there's really fascinating stuff going on here, where the state is pointing to these people as dangerous, and that really, really resonates with today.
It sure does, and that is horrifying and fascinating. And I would imagine in this exploration of yours, in all the digging that I imagine you're doing and reading and researching, it's horrifying as much as it's kind of wowing, I would think. You must be discovering gems all the time. I mean, I do when I interview people, but I would think not nearly as much as you, digging through histories that are hidden in ways that are obvious and otherwise must be very kind of exciting in terms of its, for lack of a better word, wow factor, you know?
Well, you know, first of all, I think interviewing people is the most wonderful way to get excited about the world and to learn things and be drawn towards ideas and people. So I'm with you on that. My first book, Song of the City, was devised by interviews with people thinking about their own lives in relation to the city. And but the thing about digging through the past is that it is almost infinite in what you might discover, and it enriches your present day life. So not only is your present day life populated by all of those who are living with you, but there's all these other lives and characters and situations and events and conflicts that happened in the past. And, you know, if you imagine how many people are alive today, well, there's some crazy multiplying factor of those many people who have ever lived. And as things like cities record their lives, you can discover them. You can imagine them and actually converse with them in one way or the other. And so that is a wonderful part of my life that I'm so grateful for, is that I have access to this. And it excites me to use it in my literary work.
Nathaniel, it's been wonderful talking to you about this. I'm really excited about your book, and it's really terrific talking to you about these different aspects. Before we go, I wanted to ask you what you're reading at the moment. It's a kind of an off-topic question, but I'm curious what you're looking at now.
I am very slowly reading The Chandelier by Clarice Lispector, Brazilian writer from the 20th century, who is one of the most startling voices.
She's come up before. I've never read any of those books, but when I've asked people this question, which is why it's kind of interesting, she has come up more than once before. And she's very obscure,
yeah,
really, right? But super influential.
That's right. She is quite obscure, but then we are living in a incredible moment in which living writers from all over the world, all different cultures, and many of them from the past, some not living anymore, are being translated. So works in translation make some ridiculously low percentage of what's published in the United States, maybe 2 or 3 or 4%. But there's a vitality to the project that is wonderful. And Clarissa's work has gotten caught up in that. And it's really very much because of Benjamin Moser, translator and scholar, who wrote her biography and is one of the translators, along with Magdalena Edwards, of this particular book, which was her second book. And I'm not sure there is any writer I've ever discovered or any writer I've read who brings to life the internal world of a character so richly as Le Specter does. And so that's why I would recommend this book, a beautiful book without a plot, seemingly, and that mostly takes place inside the head of a teenage a girl living in rural, so far living in rural Brazil. This is the same thing, right? As you dig through the city or history or literature, it's all about text and voice. And so the more you dig, the more you discover. And the more perhaps, I hope, or here I am romanticizing, the richer your life becomes.
I love that, and certainly agree with that. Before we go, there'll be links in this interview so people can see where you're reading or anything, or is there anything you want to plug or mention before we close about this book and any events upcoming about it?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I'll be in New York City on June 11th at Dear Mama Cafe for a reading of Everything is Borrowed. And so that June 11th, I think 6 to 8 p.m., really exciting reading series that is called This Must Be the Place, a reading series. So anyone could Google that. Reading here in Philadelphia on next Tuesday, May 29th, at the Penn Book Center. And there are further readings and events being scheduled still, and some others that are already on the books. So I love to see folks and talk about this book. It incites a lot of conversation.
Well, it was wonderful talking to you about it, Nathaniel, and I want to thank you for talking with me today.
Thanks so much, Brandon.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.